fans. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caribou. Joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking some Packers football. We're getting ready for the NFL draft. We are now less than 2 weeks away. To do so, we have a guest who joins us every year to preview the NFL draft. He is Paul Basir of PredictionMachine.com. Mr. Basir, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, man. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you for joining us. I love having you on every year, Paul, because of the outside-the-box kind of predictions you make or how you rank NFL prospects, some higher than the general public seems to rank them, some lower than the general public seems to rank them, and that's what I want to get to here. Let's start off by talking about the safety position. Kelvin sure. Pryor, safety from Louisville, many people have him in the top one or two safeties of this draft. You got him at number six, lower than I think most people do. Why is that?
Yeah, and we've got the number six as a safety, though number 58 overall. So I still think he warrants potentially a top, you know, first or second round, likely second round draft choice. He's a home run hitter. He made him play on a great defense. And while he's one of the best fumble forcers, if you will, maybe in a long time of coming out of the safety class, that's really his only main strength. Tackles and forced fumbles is all we really see show up from him, which is sometimes a really good trait to have as a strong safety. But he lines up for that big hit oftentimes, and sometimes he misses it. He doesn't have much else to get too excited about when it comes to the coverage. And as I mentioned, though, his physical numbers and attributes and combine numbers, which we do feed into our objective means, do look pretty strong. The defense itself around him wasn't that great, or at least the final defensive numbers weren't that great, so it's hard to really ascertain what his value is. I should note, even though he's the number six safety, we grade him at, we call 7.8 on a 0 to 10 scale, which is good enough to start on some teams. It is good enough to start on the Packers. I think that's good news. That means the Packers could go six deep at the safety position before drafting one and still be able to pick up a player who can start at a position that's obviously of need.
Staying with the defensive backfield here, Kyle Fuller, cornerback from Virginia Tech. You have him as the 18th cornerback in this year's draft class. I think many have him as a first-round draft choice. What's with the discrepancy?
Well, I think it's really interesting because, I look at him and I see a player that we rank at 128th overall. So obviously, if he's a first round draft choice, we don't subscribe to that by any means. He played a lot. He's played 49 games in his career. He's one of the more seasoned cornerbacks at Virginia Tech. But, you know, for me personally, having watched it now looking at the numbers, his brother put up better numbers as a freshman this year at Virginia Tech for the similar defense to what Kyle's done at any point in his career. And while he's a decent playmaker, decent in the run game, decent at tackles for loss, which I think is impressive when you look at a cornerback who might be able to be all over the field and making plays, his coverage numbers are not strong to me, and not at all. You know, the pass breakups aren't there. The interceptions weren't nearly as strong. And even when you look at the yards per attempt against him throughout his career at the level of player he had in the ACC, it just doesn't line up very well with some of the other cornerbacks that we look at. The tackles and some of the other plays that he's made aren't enough to overcome the fact that he doesn't look like he can cut it as a coverage corner in the NFL.
Also at cornerback, Bradley Roby of Ohio State. You've got him as your number one overall cornerback. Highest I've seen him rated. Not that other people have him rated lowly. I think, you know, he's regarded as a good player. But why number one?
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because we have him graded well enough at an 8.9 as a rating to start at either position or over either of the cornerbacks currently on the Packers roster, which is certainly of note and probably very much of note to Packers and Badgers fans because Jared Aberderis burned him in the one probably opportunity that the people of this state had to be able to watch Bradley Roby. However, he was consistently put on an island at Ohio State, and while it wasn't always pretty, he put up safety-like numbers in the run game, but yet he has the best pass breakups and best per pass attempt of any of the corners, at least of the FBS level of the draft eligible corners, and has pretty strong numbers pretty much across the board as well. There's a couple of really bad game tapes on there, and I get that, but that was more, to me, at least from what we've seen, Ohio State's scheme and putting him out there and letting him get burned in some circumstances because he had the athleticism to make up for it in the times when that happened. We have him projected for 69 tackles, 3 interceptions, 12 pass breakups, and as being able to, as I mentioned, to start on really most NFL teams in year one as the best overall corner, the 8th best overall player in the draft.
Here's a player I'm really interested in picking your brain about because I think a lot of people have him pegged as a late-round draft choice. You have Iowa inside linebacker James Morris ranked as the number 2 inside linebacker in this year's draft class. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, why so high? What's the difference between most people's low rankings, your high ranking?
Yeah, it's very interesting because I see the analysis on him as being small, maybe not being able to put on the requisite weight, as not being an elite athlete, but yet he checks every box for us. 6'1", 240 is certainly capable of being able to play at the inside linebacker position for just about any team in the NFL. None of his combine numbers fail to check the boxes that we need when we're looking at being able to have the athleticism that you need to play at the NFL level. And yet, and he's not a tackling machine either, which I think is probably a negative that a lot of people see in their minds. You know, he hasn't put up the same kind of numbers like a Luke Kuechly did at Boston College, but he does everything well. Every single thing that I look at, he's good enough to play at the NFL level, and ultimately that results in a player that's number 2 inside linebacker, number 22 overall on our board, potentially a first-round draft choice. Makes plays as both a pass rusher and in coverage. He's among the top 10 draft-eligible inside linebackers in basically every statistic. Projected tackles, projected sacks, projected tackles for loss, projected interceptions, and pass breakups. I like to see an inside linebacker, not necessarily that makes that gets the sacks or the tackles for loss, though he has them, but is around the football. And that is definitely true with James Morris, linebacker out of Iowa, who was there when in pass coverage making plays with the interceptions and pass breakups, and is there when needed to when he was asked to blitz and come through and make plays in the backfield. He did everything. I don't know why he's not getting more buzz personally. I think he could be and should be at the very least a secondary prospect.
We're talking to Paul Basir of PredictionMachine.com here at a Monday morning on Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central. Mr. Basir, Jackson Jeffcoat, Texas defensive end / outside linebacker, one of these hybrid kind of pass rushers. You got him number 2. I know he had a big senior season, but we're kind of slow before that. Do you see him kind of on an upward trend?
I do, and I mean, this is really interesting because he was Jadeveon Clowney the year before Jadeveon Clowney because he had he's got the lineage in this case, which Clowney doesn't necessarily have, but then also was the top overall recruit coming out of high school, had an injury, and while he was injured with a shoulder injury his junior season, Clowney was putting up crazy numbers. But to me, athleticism-wise, he's a slightly smaller, slightly less athletic, but yet still similar player to what Clowney can do. And he does similar, and he did similar things in his senior season to what Clowney did in his junior season. The injury concerns are there, though they're not technically there for Clowney, and I'm sure that's a big difference between how they're evaluated. And I know he's 6'4", 254 versus 6'5", 6'6", and 270 or so, but yet I don't understand why Jeffcoat, when you compare those two players, and obviously when you compare him to everybody else that's in the draft class as well, why he's not getting more attention. I've got him as the 11th best player overall. If he can put together a season like that when he's healthy and he still had the athleticism and put up the numbers he did at the combine, I would grade him as the second most athletic defensive end in this draft class behind Clowney. Putting together the productivity and having that athleticism is recipe usually for success in the NFL, and we've got him as a player that can step in and contribute right away.
Yeah, I like those guys who have their best season their senior year, despite, you would think attention a lot placed on them. You see a decrease in production a lot of players, but anyway, Dee Ford, you have as your number 17 pass rusher. Here's a guy who, of course, was on Auburn's SEC winning team, went to the national championship, had the big Senior Bowl. Why number 17?
Yeah, and 228 overall, which I think is even more notable because he's on that question mark as to whether or not he should even be drafted, according to our analysis. Yeah, he grades as a 6.1, which anything below a 7 means that he's below where he's essentially a replacement level player in terms of what he's going to look like in the NFL right off the bat. I'd say he's a one-trick pony with a one stellar season kind of player, despite the fact that he played he's second in games played among all defensive ends. Even though he's second in games played among defensive ends in this year's draft class, he's 12th in sacks, 18th in tackles for loss, and 20th in tackles. He doesn't have that elite jump-off-the-board athleticism, though he obviously is a very good athlete. And he's significantly smaller than even Jethro, who we just talked about, who's on the small end for a defensive end. Even as an outside linebacker, I don't know where you can get too excited about him because he was only a pass rusher. If you're looking for a player like that, I'd be much more comfortable with an Anthony Barr, who did it for two seasons and is only two seasons in that role, who's a better athlete, a bigger player, and keep it to the quarterback consistently. I would be very concerned if any team that I was rooting for drafted D4, just I think at this point, unless it's in the sixth or seventh round where it's a flyer, it's a waste of a draft choice just because I don't see that where he's had the productivity, save for the very, very end of his career.
Along the defensive line, you have Lewis Nix, the Notre Dame defensive tackle, ranked number 17. I think some consider him the number one overall kind of big-bodied nose tackle. Yeah. Is it just that bad of a year for nose tackles this year?
I think so. I mean, he might even be the number one nose tackle. He's still just the 17th best defensive tackle on our list. Now, I will admit that the system that we use, which is completely objective at Prediction Machine, and you've seen a lot of the numbers kind of in the output from this, it's probably weakest at this point. It's probably even better at offensive line and evaluating those players than it is at the nose tackle position because it's a very specific kind of position where it's difficult to understand the value of the player. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got him projected, if you look at him, he played under defense with other NFL players like Stephen Tuitt and Manti Te'o, so it's hard to understand his role in the defense. And he averaged less than 2.5 tackles per game and only had 2.5 sacks in his entire career. Evaluating the value of Lewis Nix is difficult. His size is there. His athleticism isn't good, but it's all relative, and I'm not sure it's still good when compared to players like Dontari Poe, et cetera. I would stay away from him in general. I don't think the Packers need a 340-pound defensive tackle on the inside, and he's a hitter, complete hit or miss as to whether or not he's going to be of value. We've got him evaluated as the 159th overall player. If he goes in the fifth, sixth round or so and the Packers pick him up, I think there could be value there, but anything before that, I think is taking a chance on a position and a player that just wouldn't be of value.
Let's contrast that with Caron Reed, the defensive tackle out of Princeton. You have him as your number two overall defensive tackle. I'm assuming because of the potential for pass rush production.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, he's only the 61st best overall player, so there's a huge gap. But our number one overall player is Aaron Donald. He's the only defensive tackle we think is a starting caliber player right now. So I think it's a very weak draft class in general, the defensive tackle position. But we've got Caron Reed as 61st overall, second best defensive tackle. Yes, he's 40 pounds lighter than the guy we just talked about. But the pass rush is part of this. And actually, what's really interesting is he played at a lower level, Princeton, and yet he needed, and in order to prove to us that you can be an NFL player, you need to put up stellar numbers there. And I think he did put up the requisite stellar numbers from a smaller school, at least to be considered among the second-day prospects. I'm really interested as well in the 7 blocked kicks. And I know that blocked kicks is a stat that generally pops into people's mind as translating from one level to the next, but it's in a way to illustrate that the player dominated at his level in every capacity. The pass rush numbers are there. He played on a team that, relative to its competition, was very good against the run. And with the 7 blocked kicks, they used him in just about every way that they could, and he absolutely dominated at his level. That's a good suggestion, at least, that he'll be able to perform well at the NFL.
Paul, before we let you go, we've focused on the defensive side of the football. I just quick want to ask you about a little bit of offense here. Jace Amaro, I saw, checking out PredictionMachine.com, your projections, 65 projected receptions in his rookie year. Do you really think that's possible for a guy like Jace Amaro? It's a big number for a rookie.
Yeah, it's not. And this is interesting because it's not a great tight end class, though we do expect Jace Amaro to be better as a rookie than anybody that the Packers currently have on their rosters in terms of the overall impact. He's not as good in some way capacities, obviously blocking as others, but he's the best pass catcher in this group, and he's got sure hands, unlike Eric Ebron, who is a very alarming drop rate. We see Jace Amaro as a slightly below average blocker, but the surest thing overall at the tight end position in this draft. We actually have Troy Nicklaus, who is more a blocker than a receiver right now is the second best tight end. If you're looking for the all around threat in this draft class, I don't think it's there. But if you're looking for a guy who can come in right away and be a threat in the passing game, Jason Morrow, you mentioned 65 catches, 688 yards, and likely in the 8 to 10 touchdown range, depending on the system, obviously, and the team that it goes to. But that would be our general projection for him. We think he can step right in and be an NFL caliber tight end.
Last guy here, Wisconsin connection, running back James White. You've got him ranked as your number 3 overall running back. I haven't seen him that high anywhere else. What do you like about James White?
Yeah, and I run the risk of blasphemy, obviously, though I'm saying good things about a Badger running back here, because we actually have him graded better than Monte Ball from last year. And a lot of that has to do with the strong to elite receiving skills. James White is the best combination of running skills and receiving skills of any running back in this draft. He's behind Jeremy Hill and Carlos Hyde, two bigger backs that are better on a per-carry basis that can be more impactful in general. But if you're looking for a guy who can step in, likely we have him as the 37th overall pick, so somewhere in the second potentially third round, a running back that can step right in and be an asset to a team. White was that way in several different roles throughout his collegiate career. We have him as a starter if he stepped in and did that, averaging about 1,000 yards in our projections on 4.5 yards per carry, 38 catches, and 290 yards receiving. That would be his projection for a completely average NFL team in his rookie season. That's really good. It's not necessarily elite, but it's certainly of the caliber to be able to start in the NFL. Actually, he grades exactly what we would give a grade to an average NFL starting running back. I like James White. He was flew under the radar consistently at Wisconsin, but was consistently very good in every capacity of the game. I think that's something that's important to us that we evaluate, and I think he could step right in and be a contributor to an NFL team next year.
I'm there with you. I've said this for a long time. I think James White is the perfect complimentary back, could be like one of the best, you know, number 2 running backs in the NFL, which, I mean, when you start, you know, using a guy that gets a lot of receptions, that can be a significant contribution to a team, like you said. Paul, I've taken up a lot of your time. Thank you for joining us. You're a wealth of information. I love how you could just, you know, cite these things off the top of your head here. I'm sure a lot of research goes into it, but thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, man.
All right. Take care. Paul Basir of PredictionMachine.com joining us here on Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Monday morning. Thanks to him for joining us. Thanks to you, the listener, for joining us as well as we have going through checking out the Packers news of the day here. On a Monday morning, I want to get to one of the things that happened last Friday, probably one of the last big news notes since, you know, the weekend happened and not a lot happening there in terms of breaking news. But last Friday, the Packers announced another resignation from the coaching staff. Offensive line assistant Joel Hilgenberg stepping down, becoming the second Packers assistant coach to resign this offseason, joining outside linebackers coach Kevin Green, which, you know, a lot of people caught, you know, by surprise at the time. Both guys citing family concerns as the reason they are stepping down. And you have to wonder, is this a growing trend? Is this something for concern? Is there something within the Packers organization that's awry? I'm not sure I'm willing to go that far yet, but I mean, this maybe starts the questioning, calling into questioning, why is this happening? And a little bit of weird timing. I mean, why now? Why just as the Packers start their off-season training program last week, you know, it was 1 week ago where the Packers started. You know, why now? Because now the Packers are going to, I don't know if they're going to try to fill his position or not, or simply maybe promote from within. You know, they have an offensive quality control coach. Are they just going to promote that person or just simply try to go without it? I mean, Joel Hilgenberg was an assistant offensive line coach, so that, you know, they have a regular offensive line coach, albeit, you know, one of the toughest positions, I think, because you have the most players from a number standpoint. I mean, there's 5 starters on the offensive line, you know, and that's not to count the backups and all that stuff. So, I mean, there's a lot of, if you're an offensive line coach, you're in charge of a lot of people, you know, probably more so than any other position on the team, you know, where you're in charge of just safeties or just corners or just inside linebackers. Well, now all the linebackers are together as well under, Winston Moss, but he's got an assistant too. So anyway, you know, but I mean, we, you know, why these guys citing family concerns, I think it does call into question the demands placed upon assistant coaches in the NFL. I mean, you hear the stories all the time, how they're, you know, at the team facility for hours upon hours, sleeping at the facility and you know, not being able to spend time with your family. I am willing to believe the sentiment that they want to spend time with family. It's simply from the aspect of guys like, you know, the guys who stepped down, Kevin Green, Joel Hilgenberg. These are guys who also played in the NFL. And as a byproduct of being a player and previously a coach, you've got to think these guys made multi-millions of dollars. Definitely Kevin Green did. I mean, here's a NFL Hall of Fame caliber type of player. I know he got himself some nice contracts during his career. Joel Hilgenberg, kind of more of a role player in the NFL, but still, I know, played several seasons in the NFL. Has been coaching for several seasons. I'm sure as long as he hasn't been frivolous with his money, he's probably financially stable. Can I blame these guys for wanting to spend more time with family? I personally can't. Life is short. And as we, you can just scroll down and in our, you know, latest buzz section here at Packers or CheeseheadTV.com, I wrote, you know, as the news broke, last Friday, I wrote, you know, reaction piece, just short, kind of citing also two former Packers assistants who lost family members. They're now former Packers coaches. But, I mean, you probably have heard about these. Of course, Joe Philbin, you know, not long ago, during the end of the 2011 season, we're talking like in December here, his son dies, drowns. Former Packers coach, former Packers assistant, Andy Reid, now the head coach with the Chiefs, ended up happening while he was with Philadelphia. Lost his son, died, and you know, it just tragic things that, you know, I'm not equating like Kevin Green and Joel Hilgenberg have family problems or something that, you know, urgent they need to attend to, but you know, just from the fact that, you know, again, can you blame them for wanting to be with family when you have reminders like this? How precious and short life can be sometimes, and you want to make the most of it and spend it with people you hold hold closest to you, hold the most dearest to you. It's, you know, I get it. I get it. I buy, you know, I think there's some conspiracy theorists out there that wonder, you know, well, spending time with family is code for, you know, being fired or something, you know, or asked to be, you know, step down, resign, whatever. I don't know. I mean, I see no indication of that. And again, I think the timing is something a little bit weird here with Joel Hilgenberg. Again, I see that, you know, the start of the offseason program has begun already, so why now? But I mean, you know, if the Packers wanted to fire Joel Hilgenberg, they would have done so after, you know, immediately after the season ended. And they didn't. So why now? There's all sorts of things that could have gone on behind closed doors. But until I'm privy to them, until I'm aware of them, you know, I just can't, you know, I think it would be disrespectful to say the Packers, you know, asked him to resign or something like that. So, you know, I'm not going to go there. I get it here that they want to spend time with family, you know, especially if they're financially well-to-do, you know, if they've got, you know, if they, you know, in terms of Kevin Green, Joel Hilgenberg, if they've made enough money over the course of their lifetimes to live comfortably, why not? You know, why not spend more time with family? I see it. I get it. I guess I feel bad for the Packers that they're losing, you know, guys who that I respected, at least from afar. And again, I don't know these guys personally, but I mean, you know, Kevin Green, of course, being a big name, everything you hear about him is rather, you know, has been rather complimentary. You know, a guy who has very much been given credit for helping to develop Clay Matthews. There was the point in, you know, Super Bowl XLV where he got his, you know, FaceTime on the NFL Films video saying, it is time, and, you know, how motivational Kevin Green is and all those things. So, yeah, again here, I mean, the Packers losing some assistance. I feel bad for the Packers, but I don't know, is it a product of the Packers organization or just the coaching profession as a whole where guys want to step down? I don't know the answer to that, and you can feel free to throw out your guesses in our live blog or anything like that, but it's what the Packers are going to have to live with now. Like I said, they haven't announced anybody to take over Hilgenberg's spot as coach. I don't know if they will or not. I you know, just because, like I said, I think the offensive line is such a big group. I think they almost got to, and, you know, whether it's promoting, I don't even know who's the quality control assistant for the Packers. I don't even know off the top of my head if that person, you know, is kind of like, you know, offensive line oriented. I mean, you know, there's a big difference between guys who work with the offensive line and guys who work with skill position players. So I don't really know what direction they go there, whether they try to hire somebody. I mean, I guess you can always look to the college ranks and try to hire somebody from there. And it, you know, it just a chain reaction. Then the college is forced with, you know, finding a replacement as well. We'll see how it all plays out. And just, you know, one other note this morning that I saw, I passed it along on Twitter. If you happen to follow me there, report from Aaron Wilson of the Baltimore Sun of NationalFootballPost.com saying Notre Dame outside linebacker Prince Shembo visited the Green Bay Packers. One of those pre-draft visits. Every NFL team is only allotted 30 of them. I shouldn't say only. I mean, 30 can be quite a bit. But the Packers using it on Prince Shembo. And here's a guy, you know, a lot of times they use these visits on these kind of lesser known players, kind of guys who fly under the radar, weren't invited to the combine. Well, Prince Shembo was. Prince Shembo was kind of, you know, he's not an under the radar type of guy. I mean, he isn't a first round draft choice, but here's a guy who was invited to the NFL combine. So the Packers had the opportunity to see him there. I mean, maybe he wasn't one of the, you know, at the NFL combine, they get 60 visits with players, and maybe he wasn't ended up being one of the 60. So they, you know, they want to talk to him, get him to know him better, things like that. Just interesting. There you go. A somewhat bigger name that the Packers talking to, Prince Shembo in Notre Dame. Had a really good year. The year Notre Dame went to the national championship game two seasons ago, the 2012 season, or following the 2012 season, however you want to quantify that. But, yeah, outside linebacker, kind of an edge rusher, you know, 3-4 outside linebacker kind of guy who plays on the line of scrimmage in the trenches, you know, similar to Clay Matthews, things like that. So interesting there to hear that come out here on a Monday morning. So, but that'll do it for today's show. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us here on a Monday morning. Stay tuned to Cheesehead TV all week long for all your news needs. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, I'm Brian Caravu. We'll see you later, everyone. I leave you today with a song called Ace in the Hole by the Radiators, the Rads, on Psy Fidelity Records. Go Pack, go!